All right, we're continuing our study here just a little bit on James, especially this triumph in tribulations. And I really do hope and pray that we are getting a better understanding of trials and what that really means to us. There's a mindset, and I hope that you and I continually embrace this mindset on a regular basis. A couple of weeks ago, growth group, we were supposed to go through the day reminding ourselves that we're a bond slave. And again, you understand there's a difference between a bond slave and, shall we say, a military conquered slave. And again, this is so important because for us today as we, whether we realized it or not, when we accepted Jesus Christ as our Savior, we gave up a master, sin, Satan, destruction, and we embraced a new master. And what we kind of did with this New Testament motif here is we kind of went to the side of the door, and the master would take some sort of a punch or an awl, and he'd knock a hole in our ear so that everyone would know that we were a willing slave to this master till death. We were, again, his bond slave. And again, it's just very important that you and I realize that we are the bond slaves of Jesus Christ. And why that's so important, at least to me, when I'm going through troubles is because I'm not, as the poem Invictus says, I am not the captain of my fate, nor am I the master of my soul. But God is. So, I know then that I have a heavenly Father who loves me and who cares for me, and he is allowing through his nail-pierced hands all these various trials that I'm going through. And that just makes things look so much different. And again, you all have heard the example, but it is so true that we need to have the proper mindset. If I take these glasses off now, you guys are really good looking. Because, see, my reading eyeballs aren't so good. So if I want to see this, now this is all just a blur. So I have my options of seeing my notes, which now look clear, and you guys look, well, blurry. Or we could do one or the other, but unfortunately, I can't do both. But it's the same thing, and this is so important as we work down here with the idea of wisdom. We got to have the proper mindset in order to get the right wisdom, which is going to help us receive the prize, the blessing, the crown of life which God has for us. But again, if we miss this point that we are the master of our fate and we are the captain of our soul, you know, the poem Invictus, dark is, that doesn't matter. Look it up on Google. It's a kind of a famous poem, not a very biblical poem, but if I realize that God is my master, then it kind of puts everything in a different perspective. Again, the present reality, you know, back here in the first century, Rome was persecuting them. And I know I'm reading some in here, but knowing human nature as we do, it is possible that they could have denied this follower of the way. They could have denied the Christianity, put their yarmulkes on, and went to church on the Sabbath day. They could have done all that, but they didn't. They stood their ground. We are no longer of the old dispensation. We are now followers of what we believe and is in truth, our Messiah. And our Messiah is now telling us to worship on the first day of the week, not the seventh day of the week. And our Messiah is saying we don't have to give sacrifices anymore. And our Messiah is, and as a result of all this counter-cultural, radical stuff, they were being persecuted. But see, this should be an encouragement to you and I. Because as I have here in my notes, you know, your faith has gotten you into this mess. But see, that's a good thing. That is a good thing because you're staying the course. You're not giving up. You're not walking away from the Christianity and saying, nuts with this. You know, they're not friendly. So-and-so didn't say to me, I'm not going to church anymore. You know, you're staying the course. And as a result of it, we will enjoy the same promises that these scattered tribes, these 12 Jewish tribes who have scattered, they're persecuting and says there in verse 12, if you endure, if you persevere, you will be rewarded. And I would just encourage you the same. Stay the course. Don't deviate. As Galatians says, don't become weary in well-doing. And you know why that was written? Because we do get weary in well-doing. It's not fun to be ostracized. It's not fun to be persecuted. Just stay the course. Stay the course and it will work out. Then we got to have this proper perspective in verse 2. We got to count it. And again, as I said a couple of weeks ago, you know, we got to remember that one of the big things we got to keep in our forefront of our minds in the first chapter, at least, of James is faith. faith. Because if it's all about faith, like we read there, all I need is Christ. We were on this hopeless, helpless course. We were hell-bound for destruction. But then Christ came on the scene with grace. And all I need is Christ. Well, if Christ then, if I had that mindset, if Christ brings in irritations, devastations, denials, or disappointments, some of which we looked at last week, we're not going to be so destroyed by it when we understand that it is but a tool in the refiner's hand that is trying to shape us and mold us into his image. Is the molding process painful? Yes. We shed tears. There's disappointments. Because again, as we as human beings, it will be done again. And he will do it again. And she will do it again. And Scogan, yes, he will do it again. But we have to understand that we're not the enemy per se. But we're instruments that God is using to mold us and transform us into his image. So that's when verse 3 comes into play. Knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. And again, I understand that I've really been attacking some of our perspectives of life. But aren't you glad in a way that God is relentless? Aren't you glad in a way that God just will not quit on you? What is he talking about? Well, you know, back in the day when we were going to school, if you flunked the class, what'd you have to do? You had to take it again. But after a while, if you were somebody like me, they just got tired of seeing me. So they said, you know what? Let's just pass this guy and give him his D minuses or whatever is needed. I don't want to see, 15 years old in second grade. He's got to go, man. He's got to go. So they would just kind of push you along, and push you along, and you never really ever learned anything. But God is not like that. God is saying, listen, I will transform you. I will conform you into my image. Now, you may be recoiling, resisting, rebelling against that, but all right. Here, let's try this. And God is just not going to take the trials away. And you're thinking, I came here to hear that. I want my money back. I'm leaving. But again, it's the mindset. It's the mindset. If all I need is Christ and all I need is you, then that's what we're all about. It's for me to live as Christ and to die as gain. Forgetting those things which are behind, I press forward toward the mark or the prize, the high calling of Christ, of God in Christ Jesus. Yeah, I messed that up a little bit. Thank you. But that's what we're doing here. That's what our life is all about. It's not for peace and contentment and quiet and comfort on earth. We're his bond slaves to do his bidding, to be conformed into his image. And God will not let us take a day off from that. And he will continue to try us and test us so that we can be, as verse 13 says, or 12, that when we are approved, when it's all said and done and there's no more dross, there's no more imperfections, when we are complete and mature and lacking nothing, he can say, well done. You did good. Come on into heaven. I got some really good things for you. But then that brings us then also to verse 4. We got to maintain a surrendered will. Let it. And this is where, again, it's just a worldview we must maintain. Let it. I don't like the letting it. When here today, or this week was a rather busy week for us, and in spite of it, I had electrical problems and I had plumbing problems. And you know what? I did not want to let, because our refrigerator is still plugged in via an extension cord, yet today, I don't want to let that work in my life. It's like, God, why can't it be a quick fix? And then Friday night when I was working on the boiler, I didn't want to let it transform me. It's like, God, I want to let it be done with. Right? And you all are there. And I didn't want to pick too badly on the people on the prayer sheet here. And I hope many of the desires are different, but there have been in the past many people on our prayer sheet, and their prayer is to get off the sheet. And when we look at verse 4, what should be their desire for being on this prayer sheet, or at least one of them? Let it have its perfect work. I don't want to waste the suffering, God. I got family trouble. I got personal trouble. I got financial trouble. I got, I don't know, car trouble and all the other troubles that are. I got health trouble. I got cancer. But you know what? Pray for me that I will let it have its perfect work in me, so that even though the outward man may be perishing day by day, the inner man could be renewed and restored. And when my body does die, as we will all do one day apart from the rapture, I will be mature and complete, perfect, and nothing wanting, as verse 4 says. So there is a mindset and a perspective that we must maintain. Now, oftentimes we don't really buy into that when we come down to verse 5. Verse 5 says, if any man lacks his wisdom, let him ask of God, and he tells different ways in which he'll give it. So, I want to do it my way, and I don't want to let it. I recoil, resist, and rebel at the instruments that God brings into my life to shape me. I don't want really any part of that. And then I say, okay, God, give me wisdom. You got to understand that wisdom is right in the middle of problems. But there's a good thing there as well. God will give us wisdom if we do ask for it. Wisdom. Wisdom. And I believe within the context here, and we know what, you know, wisdom is, you know, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom and knowledge and all that kind of stuff. But I think as we look here in the first part of James chapter 1, wisdom that he's talking about here is connecting all the dots and seeing again that this problem in my life is not isolated. You know, my goodness, I'm such a proud person. You know, I know why I was tripping over my tongue so much this morning. God was just reminding me not to be so proudful, to pray. Or, you know, we thought we were pretty autonomous and we could do it without God. And then God has brought some interruptions, maybe with some financial struggles or some health struggles. And God's just trying to help us to connect all the dots, that it's not just an isolated thing, but God's got a plan. And it's all working according to his plan to bring it to his desired end. Wisdom to see the big picture. Wisdom, again, just to see life through eternity. And I don't know, it may not be valid, but I like it. I thought of it. So I'm going to say it again. I guess I can do that since I have the floor. But, you know, our life, in my minuscule, diminutive intellectual status, my life here on earth is but a single molecule in the ocean of eternity. But you know what? Sometimes I reverse that. I think my life is an ocean of time and eternity is but a single molecule. So I oftentimes shortchange eternity for the present because eternity, that's nothing. But as you and I know, the opposite should be true. We should be living our life through the lenses of eternity, and that's, I believe, some of the wisdom that God is offering to us. And it is a powerful resource. We can all know through, we all know people, and especially that's one of the advantages of wisdom. You see life played out so many different times and so many different places. And there's oftentimes a similar outcome in different ways in which it plays out. Wisdom is so important to be able to just see how life plays out. Those who live for eternity live in a certain way. Those who live for the present, they live a certain way. We've seen that play out, and we've all seen it. And let's just keep moving. I don't need to develop that much further. Prayer. Prayer is something, again, that's very powerful. And notice again what he says there. If any one of you lacks wisdom, let him ask. Ask. Though you may not have it there in your English translation, the verb there is a present tense verb. We are to be asking God. It's an individual thing that you and I need to be doing on a regular basis. We are to be asking Him. It's to be incessant. It would be the child that we have seen sometimes in the grocery store, and mom's got him in the cart, and they got all the candy bars there. And the child, without stopping, is going to manipulate the mother into getting the candy bar. And he is just incessant. He will not stop until mom gives in, and mom gives in just to shut him up, and then they go on through the register. We need to be incessant. And we can think of a couple of stories in the New Testament where God says, you know what? It's okay for you to be incessant. You know the lady banging on the door, and the guy's laying in bed? Remember the story there in the Gospels? And he doesn't want to get out of bed, but he says, listen, if I don't get out of bed, she's going to still there banging on the door, so I might as well go see what she wants so I can go back to sleep. We need to do that. We need to ask of God. You know, sometimes we talk about the wisdom of Solomon. Boy, I wish they had the wisdom of Solomon. And I don't want to detract from the wisdom of Solomon, but what are we offered here in 1:5? God. We can ask the wisdom of God. And it's inclusive. It's given to all. Who gives to all. There is a lot of injustice in our world. There's a lot of favoritism in our world, a lot of nepotism. You know, it's again back to the old days, the golden rule. You know, the ones who have the gold do the ruling. Not so when it comes to wisdom here with God, who gives to all, and he gives it all liberally. He's indulgent. He's indulgent. One of the things that I had growing up in my early Christian life was you never really wanted to fully give yourself over to God because then God would make your life miserable. Have any of you ever heard people say something like that? Which is really stupid because if God wanted to make my life miserable, would he have to wait for me to give it up? I mean, he can make my life miserable anytime he wanted to, but we're all so afraid. I was afraid. I really can't give myself fully to God because then my life's going to be miserable. But there's also another idea of that, and that is that if I give myself to God, then God may put the proverbial carrot in front of the donkey pulling the cart just to keep it going. He'll just tease me through life, and he'll throw me the tablespoon of water out of the bucket. But as you look here at verse 5, he doesn't throw teaspoons of the bucket. He throws the bucket on you. If you want wisdom and you have the right perspective, if you have the right mindset, if you understand your reality, he'll dump the bucket of wisdom on you. And he will give you all that you need. And then he's without insult. It says without reproach. Without reproach. God will never give a way that will embarrass us. God will never give it in such a way to humiliate us. He will never scold you or rebuke you for asking. Ask, seek, and ye shall find. Knock, and it shall be given. And that's all okay until we get to verse 6. And in verse 6, again, I'll use my prayer sheet here just as a powerful reminder. Some of these requests, they have been on here for a long time. Some of these, those of us who pray through this prayer sheet, once we get started, we don't even need to look at it anymore because some of these people have been here for a long time. Now, doesn't happen to you, but you know what happens to me when I pray for a request for a long time? My faith kind of just shrinks a little bit. And it seems to be, though it's not right, and I'm not encouraging you to follow my example here, but it seems like the longer the duration of the prayer request, sometimes in the same degree, the shorter the faith. Because, you know, we're really pumped up. You know, God, answer it today. And sometimes God does. Woo-hoo, that's great. Hey, God, I really need your help for this, whatever it is, by Friday. God comes through. Well, God, I really want you to, and sometimes it's our unsaved loved ones. Robin and I, we prayed for her parents for 38 years. Or Robin was praying for 38 years. I didn't know Robin 38 years ago, but she's been praying for 38 years for her parents. So, you know, as we got into the relationship, got married, I was praying for my in-laws too, and we prayed for 30 years or so. But I got to be honest with you, though, as the length got longer, the faith kind of got smaller. And then God showed us how feable we were, and just not but a year or two ago, they both accepted Christ as their Savior. But when it comes, yes, praise be to God, because only God could do that. But when we come now to verse 6, we can't just fly through that. Because again, some of the requests that you've had for now maybe a month or two or a year or two, I don't see why there couldn't be people that have been praying a prayer for a decade. God's saying, don't lose your faith in that. If you're going to come to me, as verse 6 says, Scogan's translation, either believe that I can answer it or don't even pray the prayer. Because if you don't believe I can answer it, then why are you even asking me? And I know that's kind of a tough pill to swallow because, again, some of these requests we've been praying for a long time. So if we're going to go to God, we have to ask in faith, not wavering in any way, shape, or form. Because the next verse, verse 7 says, if you're going to doubt, let not that man, and it's kind of interesting too because we're talking about wisdom, right, in verse 5. But notice the word he uses in verse 7, let not that man think he will receive, and what's the word? Wow, that's kind of a broad jump. I mean, we went from wisdom now to not receiving anything. But then again, if you're not going to believe in me, why should I give you anything? Because what does Hebrews says? For without faith, it is impossible to believe God. For he that cometh to God must believe that he is. And second, that he's a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. So we must have faith, no doubts. And that is easier said than done on the prolonged, protracted, drawn-out prayer requests. So honestly, have you lost your faith for some of the prayers that you've been praying for and you're not seeing the results or the outcomes that you want? God knows the struggle that we have, and he'll give us the wisdom that we need for that. The uncertainty there in verse 6, he kind of picks up what kind of interesting that word for in verse 6. It's a descriptive description. He's going to give us a little illustration of a man who doubts that God's ability to be there, I guess, number one, as Hebrews says, and to answer his prayers. And he says, and then he picks it up with a nautical word picture. And he just says, basically, this is just like a ship. Now remember, they didn't have diesel engines back in the first century. It's all wind-powered, because we sometimes lose that. So there's a wind. It's no big deal. Some of you, there's one or two of you that have been through typhoons on your big ships in the Navy days. No big deal. You get jostled around a little bit. You just plow your course. You go on. They didn't have engines back in those days. They were at the mercy of the wind. And the waves are just buffeting and throwing about this boat, as we saw the disciples with Jesus, remember? And there's water sinking, and they come to Jesus Christ as he's sleeping. He says, man, don't you care that we're going to die? Well, this is that same word picture. This poor person is being batted back and forth and back and forth. He's being beaten by the environment. And then not only is there that struggle within us, because double-mindedness is just a miserable place to be. I remember college, I guess it really didn't bother me too much. I was doing some contracting or handyman stuff, would be a more accurate term, on my own, trying to pay through college. But when I went to seminary, I got a job at Honeywell, okay? And I'm going to study to be a preacher. And in fact, I was going to a Baptist seminary. So now all those connotations that go through it. So then you go and you join Honeywell, you join the union, and seniority tells you where you go to be. So I go into this, I don't know, let's just say the punch press department. And I go into the punch press department, hey, who are you? You know, what are you? Oh, I'm a student. Kind of downplay that you're going to a seminary trying to be a preacher. And then, because they don't really know who you are, then they invite you to go Friday night to go cash the, because we work second shift, go out Friday night after work to go cash your paycheck at the bar. And they'd invite you to, well, I'm not going to do that. And it's like, well, like, why not? Or, you know, the jokes or whatever, whatever. And it didn't take very long until I got transferred, I don't know, into the hand screw department or the machine shop or something. And I finally said, you know what? Let's just be up front, right off the bat. I am Dan Scogan, and I'm going to the seminary there in Minneapolis, and I'm studying to be a preacher. So everybody knew it, and life just made it so much easier for me. So those of us who are doubting, not only do we have this struggle of trying to walk the fence, you know, am I going to live for God or live for self? Pleasing to God, pleasing to myself. Do I got to be a servant to my family or can I be selfish? And we just, it's just a tough, tight line to walk sometimes. Not only that, but then as we go down to verse 8, it goes on and it tells us that it affects all of our life. A double-minded man. It's kind of interesting. This is unique to James. He only uses it again one time in chapter 4, verse 8. He kind of coined this idea. We picked up on it, John Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress. You have Mr. Facing Both Ways. Or I know I'm really dating myself here, but remember Dr. Doolittle? He had that, like, llama. Mr. Push Me, Pull You. Oh, wow. You guys got some Google searching tonight. But there's an inner conflict that we have within our lives, which makes us unstable in all our ways. And it's just a very difficult position to be in. And it all, again, goes to, again, when you think about this, he's a double-minded man, unstable in all of his ways, in all of his life, but what kind of a life is he enjoying or experiencing right now in verses 2 and 3? So you can just see how the problems continue to compound, because not only do we have all these trials and tribulations in our life externally, or maybe medically or whatever, but now we've got the struggle within our soul. Do I believe God or not? Go to church or not? Read his Bible or not? And there's just all that inner struggle because, again, God's relentless and conviction is a horrible thing. Guilt is even worse. So now we got all the stuff going around us and now we got this bag of guilt that we have to deal with. And it's just a miserable position to be in. So, I'm going to get off this in just a minute. So just have faith in God. Just believe God. And life is so much easier. All right, let me give you a couple practical portrayals of the trials in verses 9 through 11. And again, this is where context is so important in our Bible understanding, because when you read this, verse 9, let the lowly brother glory in his exaltation, what's that all about? Well, again, what we've got here in the preceding verses is we've got trials. And then we ask for wisdom. Now, you got to do it in faith or just forget it. And then we drop down to the next one. It says, now let the lowly man glory in his exaltation. That doesn't mean the lowly man is going to become filthy rich. What it means is that this man here is going to be able to boast and rejoice in what God is going to do to him. The exaltation literally has the idea in the height of him. So here's what's going on. When he's experiencing financial trouble, he knows God is using his financial poverty to purify him, and in that, he rejoices. So it goes all the way back to the mindset that I was proposing to you at the beginning 20 minutes or so ago. This man has the right perspective and mindset and outlook on life, that though I am lowly, I'm going to rejoice because, as Job says, but he knows the way that I take, and when he has tried me, I shall come forth as gold. So though I am lowly, poor, food stamps, Section 8, the whole nine yards, no way of ever getting up and into the higher socioeconomic stratus, I can still rejoice. Because again, these are instruments that my Redeemer is using to mold me into his likeness, and I just have but a molecule to live in this, and then I've got the ocean of eternity. And the wisdom allows him to see the spiritual height that he will receive and receive as a result of the trial. Then in verses following, you've got the rich man, verses 10 and 11. You've got the rich man. And again, the glory or boasting, the only verb there in this sentence is in verse 9. So you kind of get the idea that the rich is supposed to glory and boast in his humiliation. So he's got two extremes here. We've got the man who has nothing, and he's supposed to rejoice in his elevation, which is going to happen in heaven. But now you've got the rich man who is very filthy rich. I don't know, let's say Bill Gates. one of the richest men in the world, and all of a sudden it's gone. Well, as a believer, he should be rejoicing in that as well. Because why? Verses 2 and 3 and 4 of James chapter 1. Count it all joy, my brethren, when even though you are financially become destitute, you are to consider that full joy, knowing that the testing of your faith. But see, therein brings a quagmire too. Because sometimes we would rather have the convenience, the comfort, the people, the friends, the finances, the health, the security, than our faith. But then that goes back to the double-mindedness, and that's just, again, a big quagmire. So this rich man, the source and basis of his faith is going to determine his attitude when it's gone. Here's some reasons why we should glory in our humiliation. Because again, those of us who have been around for a while, and some of you have been around for a while, we have seen within the markets, within our 50Cs and our 401s or whatever it is, our IRAs and Roths, we've seen it greatly fluctuate. Right now it's on a roll, but with the government continuing to print, I don't know, however many millions of dollars every day, there may be a time where that's going to come to an end too. So he uses the illustration of a flower. And again, I'll just look at the word or the verbs there in verse 11. We got rising, we have withering, we have falling, and we have perishing. And as you look at verse 11, it doesn't look like it's happening in days and days. This is in a quick succession of time. The sun comes up, it withers, it perishes, it is gone. And you and I, we've even seen the stock market too, you know, with even fuel oil, as we're all thinking about buying fuel oil. If anyone even lights a firecracker in the Mideast, what happens to our fuel prices? Fuel oil, oh, now it's $4 a gallon. What do you mean? It was just a firecracker. You got to be kidding me. All the speculation. Very quick succession of it. And I think what James is trying to do here is remind these who have been scattered abroad, as you start your new life, whether it's up in the upper Turkey, Fertile Crescent area, or if you're going over to Egypt way, or if you're going over to a Babylon area, and you start building your life again as strangers scattered, don't be building it on finances. Don't be building it on the riches. And then lastly, he ends up there with a precious prize, a blessedness. He says there in verse 12, the very first word, blessed. And that is a word in mythology. The gods living on Mount Olympus. If you want to do some research, if you thought about the peons, the plebeians down below, looking up on Mount Olympus to the lives that the gods had, they had a blessed life. It's not the exact same Greek word, but it's the same imagery. The idea of just an idyllic, beautiful life is available to you and I as believers if we will endure. If we will but endure. The word endure, though, is used earlier in this passage again. We saw it there in verse 3. Knowing that the testing of your faith produces, depending upon your translation, patience. That's the same Greek word as verse 12. Blessed is the man who has patience, or the man who endures. So stay the course. It is true that for some of us, the mess we're in at work, the persecution we're experiencing within our families, the persecution around us, is because of our faith. Stay the course. Don't give in. Don't compromise. Don't yield. Stay the course. And you will be able to enjoy an inner quality, an inner joy that is not dependent upon external circumstances. You can have a joyful existence. Blessedness. We can experience the blessedness if in verse 2 we count it. Verse 3 we know it. Verse 4 we let it. Verse 5 if we ask. Verse 6 if we believe. Then we can have a blessed life. And then just lastly, as he ends it up there, when he has been approved, when we have been all, approved has the idea of testing of coins or metal. You know, I guess in the movies, How do the old cowboys check if the coin is gold or not? Yeah, they've approved it. Well, you know, our government does many different ways of approving or testing our money to make sure it's not counterfeit. But when we've been proven genuine, and you know, again, I know I'm out of time, but it really stinks. And I know I'm kind of going all over the gamut here. And I've said it before, but it's still true today. Don't you wish that God would have looked at Dan Scogan and he said, "You scumbag, you know what I'm going to do for you? I'm going to let you win that $400 million jackpot in South Carolina." I wish that that would happen. I really do. I keep wondering, God, why can't you just refine me through money? That would be fun, I think. It doesn't work that way. So again, we want the approved life. We want the blessed life. But again, don't forget verses 2, 3, and 4. It's going to come with difficulty. But once we have that, we will receive the crown of life. Not that the believer is going to receive life. We already have everlasting life. Because what does John 3:16 say? Let's quote it together. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believes on him should not perish but have no idea of enduring trials here. We have everlasting life. But when it comes to this, the capstone, the final piece of your education or the capstone of your career or the capstone or the achieving accomplishment of your life is this crown of life that you will have. The consummation of your salvation when we stand before him complete. The crown of life is when we stand before him complete and he looks at us and says, "Well done, good and faithful servant, enter thou into the joy of your Lord." The eternal consummation. The crown of life is experienced when the mortal takes on immortality. When the corruption becomes incorruption. And all those other neat things that God has promised to us. By the way, there are just three other references in crown. You find one in 1 Thessalonians, one in 2 Timothy, and one in 1 Peter. Triumphant in tribulations. Triumphant in tribulations. You got the right mindset. You got the right perspective. You're tapping into these powerful resources. And then let's bring it just one step closer, your faith. Your faith. You're losing a little bit of that with your prayer requests because we've been praying for them for a long time. I hope that you would not doubt God. He that cometh to God must believe that he is. And that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. All right, let's close.